In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
I'm the Mighty Manfred, and my guest today on our coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock, is Larry Kennedy, one of the guitar players in the Jelly Bricks. They're from the Harrisburg, Pennsylvania area. Their new album, Some Kind of Lucky, came out just last week on Wicked Cool Records, and it features this week's coolest song in the world, Runaway. Let's hear some of that now, and then I'll be back on the line with Larry on your coolest conversations in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
I get this feeling all the time.
For today's Coolest Conversations, I am joined by Larry Kennedy, one of the guitar players in the Jelly Bricks. Hello, Larry. How are
you? Hello, Manfred. I am doing well. How are you doing?
I am doing pretty good, thanks. I think it's been a while since we've spoken. I believe it was back in 2014, by my records, is the last time.
Yes, we did. We spoke when About the Weeknd was named Coolest Song in the World, and I misspoke during that interview and accidentally referred to my own band as the Beatles, which is definitely one of my awesome foot in mouth moments I could ever have asked for on international radio broadcast.
Well, I mean, it's understood, as you said, that it only in terms of the Beatles having been an important influence to your own musical development, right?
Very much so. They're either to be credited or blamed.
Well, you are indeed forgiven and absolved. Good to talk to you again. You know, since that time, I've spoken with all the other guys, and so now we're coming full circle. And when I've spoken with the other guys, I know I've asked them about when they started playing music, et cetera, but when I look back over my notes with you, I don't think we talked about any of that. So I feel like now we have the opportunity to get some Larry backstory. So you got to lay the Larry on me, brother. When did you have the epiphany that your day job would exist only to fuel your musical passions and aspirations?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, I almost lived in denial for a while because I was one of two middle children, and I was a peacekeeping type of sibling amongst four, and I always got along with my parents. So my rock and roll rebellion started early enough that it caused strife between me and my parents from the very beginning, because they loved music, knew that I loved music, but my father started early trying to steer me towards something maybe a bit more highbrow than rock and roll. He would have loved to have seen me be a violinist, which I did take lessons on the violin, or a pianist, and I took lessons on the piano. But I would—I remember actually being in a school orchestra and being corrected repeatedly because I would turn my violin over like a guitar. And I distinctly remember picking out something along the lines of a Chuck Berry riff on the violin, strumming away in class. And I would also get corrected for making up harmonies in the orchestra to play on my violin so I could do something different than the person next to me. But all of this kind of leaned in the direction that I had music in me. And my piano lessons were me coming in and playing the things that I had learned by ear rather than the lessons they were giving me to practice. And generally, I was trying to pick out Beatles songs and trying to make them sound like the record as opposed to the books that never seemed to match the record.
Right.
So I guess you could say I did 8 years worth of violin. I actually played a lot of classical music, and I grew up appreciating a lot of different kinds of music. My parents played Broadway show tunes and classical music in our house. And so to this day, I'm every bit as likely to break out into a Rodgers and Hammerstein number as I am something by the Troggs.
Well,
but not always on stage.
right. But this is pretty interesting. So in the midst of your violin lessons, you were already familiar with the Beatles, and you mentioned all this music going on in the household. So your parents, they were Beatles fans as well. I mean, your introduction to the Beatles came through your own household.
Well, no, actually, my father infamously declared that the Beatles wouldn't last more than 6 months back in 1964. That's infamous within our family, because as you can see, that prediction didn't work out so well for him.
Yeah.
But my father was never a huge rock and roll fan. He liked the First Class, and he actually checked out around the time Elvis came along. Nevertheless, my parents both loved music. My mother was a bit more of a rock and roll fan. She still is, actually. She's a huge Jelly Bricks fan. But my discovery of the Beatles was through the often referred to as lousy Saturday morning cartoon series that was on. I was a four-year-old kid seeing the animated Beatles, the version in the blue suits.
Right.
Where they always depicted Ringo as being a dummy. And anyway, I remember, this is actually very, very memorable to me. You were asking about the turning point. It was really the day that I was hanging out in the doorway of my parents' bedroom, and my mother had the radio on, and Strawberry Fields Forever came on the radio. And I recognized it from the cartoon show. And so I said, oh, I love this song. That's the Beatles. And my mother looked at me, and I was, again, 4 years old, and she said, how do you know that? I said, I know it from their TV show. So it was actually a little while before I even put two and two together to understand that they were real people and not just like the Archies.
Right.
Or the Partridge Family or whatever. I was in a record store with my mother looking for a Disney read-along book and record because that's what I was collecting at that age. Uh-huh. I actually had my heart set on The Lady and the Tramp, and I saw Magical Mystery Tour. And I recognized the word Beatles. And I said, can I get that? And I remember my mother tried to negotiate with me because it was about $5 more than the Disney record. It was a 7-inch record versus a 12.
Right.
And so anyway, that day I brought home Magical Mystery Tour because it had Strawberry Fields Forever on it. And I'm sure you know the record well enough to sort of grasp what happened when I put the record on. It was like a musical Alice in Wonderland experience for me.
Was that the edition that had the book in it? Since you were trying to get it as a read-along thing, you know, there initially it had... you know, several pages that were from the UK television special. There was an insert in the US album where you could flip through these pages. Well, were those pages in your version of the album?
My first version was the streamlined purple label 70s edition Capitol record. Didn't have the booklet, and it had a purple strip that blanked out where it had promised the booklet, so I didn't even know I didn't get it.
Yeah.
But then years later, I actually picked up a copy of the UK EP, the 7-inch 2 record version that had the booklet in it. So somewhere along the line, I got the booklet as a collector because I just wanted it.
And so you put the needle down on there, and you heard Strawberry Fields, and then these other tracks are coming on, and your little mind is completely doing somersaults.
I can say it was the greatest and the worst thing that happened in some ways because it altered my life path utterly. I mean, it captivated me so much that when I was in elementary school, I was the only kid who was crazy about the Beatles in the late 70s amongst every kid I knew. And then it was many years before, honestly, it seemed like other kids my age started to think that maybe this was not just something that was weird about me. but to me, it was like there was hardly a piece of entertainment you could put in front of me that would rival the Beatles for a long time. And I mean, it took me, honestly, it was the Sex Pistols that finally captivated me enough to make me think that there was something that happened after the 60s. Because the Beatles caused me to fall in love with rock and roll going in both directions. So back to the inception of the music that had influenced them,
right.
That became a part of my listening. And then all of their peers' music, it's like I'm still discovering 60s acts on the Underground Garage channel, for example, that I don't know and going, oh, this is fantastic. I need to get this. So I love music of all sorts, but that was just such a ground zero, that Beatles experience. But when I say it was one of the worst things, it also made me a bit of a music snob for a long time. For a long time, I kept noting that other things I was hearing, particularly contemporary music, just didn't seem to be as good to me.
Yeah.
I'm not quite as, snobby about it nowadays. I've grown to really appreciate a lot of different kinds of rock and roll and other, you know, music forms. But for a long time it was, well, it's not as good as the Beatles. And as it turned out, usually I was right about that.
Well, let's talk about your new album. Congratulations on Some Kind of Lucky. It's been out just
Thank
a
you.
Week now. Are the reviews coming in? Have you been getting any feedback yet?
Well, I'm going to start by saying it's not as good as the Beatles. So there's number one. However, we've been getting terrific notices. It's really gratifying. We're forever trying to do something that's as good or better than the last record we put out. And we also like to challenge ourselves and try new things. So there's always a little bit of risk and reward involved in what we put into a new record. And I'm always really happy when people like what we've done. You know, I mean, we do it because we enjoy it, but we certainly hope we're going to bring a smile to somebody else instead of angst.
Well, our coolest song in the world this week is Runaway off the new album. And my notes for the song say it was mixed by Jeff Sanoff. So he mixed it, but he did not record it.
Well, like a lot of other things on this record traveled a lot getting mm-hmm. to its destination. We started recording Runaway in Youngstown, Ohio, at okay. Amprion Recorder. That's the same studio where we had recorded Youngstown Tune-Up.
Right. When was that, Larry?
To be honest, I've lost track. it was a couple years ago, maybe two okay. years ago, three, okay. that we first started Runaway. But we only did basic tracks in Youngstown and maybe some vocals. But then we started doing a lot of recording at home in Mechanicsburg. So I know we overdubbed Garrick's bass and we did the synthesizer parts in Mechanicsburg and probably overdubbed some more vocals. Then we took it to Baltimore to Obscura Sound, where our friend Scott Ensign took the work we had done in Ohio and Pennsylvania and found a way to make that stuff sit together. And then he helped us kind of suss out what we were doing with the relationship with the synthesizer, because it's not a typical Jelly Bricks sound.
Yeah. Right.
So he added a few bells and whistles to kind of make that jive for us. And ultimately, this was handed to Jeff Sanoff. Here's a bit of stuff from Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Maryland. If you could possibly tie it together in New York, we'd love you. And he did. Well, so it's a very collaborative, weird little, it's like a ball of yarn that kept rolling.
So your other guitar player, Bryce Connor, is he singing lead on Runaway?
He is. This is a Bryce song. When he brought it in as a guitar song. Mm-hmm. And so there was no synthesizer angle, but I just kind of heard the possibility of a fun harmony. And because we like to try new things, we brought the synthesizer in. And I really get a kick out of the result because it's kind of odd. In the wake of losing Rick Ocasek from the Cars, I'm very noting that Runaway seems to bear a lot of Cars influence without us really deliberately heading that way. When I listen to it now, I hear a lot of the Cars.
So I know Bryce, you mentioned, wrote it. Do you know that he had any specific inspiration for it?
Just kind of a familiar idea of wanting to kind of get away with somebody that you're maybe having the beginning of a new relationship with, or just a romance that's in your life being challenged by the day-to-day stuff that people have to deal with. So I think it's just, I mean, I'm speaking for him, but what I get from it is a bit of that, let's get out of here and go do something fun.
Well, actually, you've always been really good, I have to say, the Jellybreaks have, with making these really clever, low-budget videos. And so far for this album, you've got a karaoke-themed one for Can't Get Over You, a whiteboard for Mrs. Misery, one where everything is going backwards but forwards for the song Brooklyn. Very, very cool effect. DOA has got this really cool time-lapse thing happening. Have you started work on a video for Runaway yet?
We have actually started on a video for Runaway. In fact, it's done, and I don't want to overpromise anything, especially since people do really enjoy the videos that we make. But my personal opinion is that I'm glad we don't have to do another one for a little while, because we're going to have a little trouble topping what we've done with Runaway. Runaway is really fun to watch. And I'm laughing thinking about all the videos you described, because, you know, we didn't set out to be a video band.
Right.
But I have to hand it to our bass player, Garrick Chow. He really just sets a high standard for what he wants to see in terms of originality. And he likes it to not be the thing you've seen 100 times, you know, even though so much of what we do, you know, we're like a blueprint rock and roll band that does exactly what bands have been doing since the 50s and the 60s. But we're always looking for new ways to reintroduce what you've already seen. So I think the Runaway video will hopefully be well received. I think it's pretty fun.
Well, I can see you're keeping the cards a little closer to your vest. But one thing I'll follow up on it, though, is a lot of these videos, my understanding is that to try and keep the cost down, to keep as minimal editing as possible, that everything, you try and do everything like one long take. Is that the case with the Runaway video as well?
Runaway is a little bit different in that, like Corner of My Eye is another one that we did that was more of an edit piece.
Yeah,
where we actually Corner of My Eye was a tremendously complicated video for us to figure out how to do in our style, meaning, like you said, with not a lot of budget and not a lot of ancillary people. But yes, the editing for Runaway, we actually did probably more shooting than maybe ever. It is an edit piece. For Runaway, there isn't as much of an actual storyline as much as there is just a lot of fun things to see. So we did do a lot of shooting for that. You know, we really do enjoy each other's company, and that's a huge part of what makes this video stuff work for us, is that we have a fun time doing whatever it is we're doing. So if it happens to be a video, we're just kind of cracking each other up the whole time we're trying to get to what Garrick wants. But the other part of it is we all kind of contribute our own ideas, because that's the environment we foster as a rule with our music and writing and everything else. So it's just an extension of the creative process for us.
Well, a fun thing that you guys are doing tomorrow night, Saturday, October the 12th, is your record release party. Tell me, where and when does the party start?
Well, we are really excited. We're going to be playing at a wonderful, it's an art gallery in Mechanicsburg, right in the Mechanicsburg zip code, 17055. Place is called Metropolis Collective. It's an art gallery by day, but it has a fantastic rock and roll club space that really, really comes off the hinges at night. Full disclosure, when you watch the Brooklyn video, you're actually doing a walking tour of the venue that we'll be playing at tomorrow night. That is Metropolis Collective. And frankly, would love to have you there sometime with the Woggles. So that's just something to put in the back of your mind. But
yeah,
Nevertheless, we're going to be playing with a group called the Bo Deadlies, who are a terrific punk rock band from Mechanicsburg. So that'll be a fun home crowd show, and we have a lot of terrific supporters in central PA who are really enjoying seeing the Jellybreaks get some attention, and they're rooting for us very much. So we look forward to it being a really fun night.
I gotta say, the Bo Deadlies, what a killer name, man. That is a great name. And they're a punk band, is that what you said?
Yeah, punk rock and roll band. The lead singer actually used to be in a band out of New York City called The Victims.
Do you have any other gigs coming up? after the record release party?
We do. We're actually going to be going back to Cleveland for the first time in a while. We're going to be playing at a club that's new to us called Stella's Music Club on the 25th. And there we're going to be playing with a great band called Pale Hollow, but also on that bill is Frank Sesich, whom you might recognize his name. He's in the Deadbeat Poets.
Right.
And he played in Steve Bader's band, and he was in Blue Ash back in the late 60s, early 70s. So he's going to be doing a solo acoustic set with us, so we're excited about that. And then coming in November, we're going to be back at Berlin in New York City with Palmyra Del Ran and the Doppelgang and Soraya and the Nuclears. So that's another cool underground garage kind of vibe show that we'll be looking forward to doing.
Definitely. Well, in addition to this week's coolest song, Runaway, you've had several coolest songs off the new album, Some Kind of Lucky, leading up to its release. A track we haven't spun yet so far is the song Faith, which I'd like us to go out with in a moment. But first, what can you tell me about Faith, Larry?
Well, Faith is another of Bryce's songs, and I really enjoy what he did with this tune. I didn't know what he was up to when he wrote it, but I kind of get a kick out of the fact that he's kind of using the word faith like it could be a woman's name, or it could be a concept, you know, or, you know, a spiritual idea. But at any rate, I like musically about it that it kind of reminds me of some classic guitar bands. And we get into some vocal stuff on this song that kind of puts me in mind of more like a Birdsey kind of harmonizing. But it's sort of that juxtaposition of that folksy bird sound with a bit more of a rocked up 70s power pop underpinning. And I always like when we can find a way to kind of blend different things that we like into a new mixture that hopefully just ultimately sounds like the Jelly Bricks.
Well, Larry, thank you so much for chatting with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Oh, it is always a pleasure, Manfred. We are so honored to have our music being played in the Underground Garage. And needless to say, it is always an honor when we're nominated for a Coolest Song in the World for the week. So thank you, and thanks for playing our records. And it's great to talk to you.
Well, right now we got to get the Faith, or at least listen to it. Faith from the Jelly Bricks off the new album Some Kind of Lucky here in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
When I got here, you were gone. I was searching for light in the darkness that you came from. When you got out,
Jelly Bricks here in Little Steven's Underground Garage, giving us Faith. And that track is part of the new album, Some Kind of Lucky, out a week now on Wicked Cool Records. Thanks again to their guitar player, Larry Kennedy, for joining me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. Remember to follow and subscribe. And join me next week when I'll chat with Spencer Alexander, bass player in New York City's Wildlife. They've just issued a brand new single. That's next week's Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.